Welcome to Calder Navigation, the podcast that embarks on a transformative journey through the lives and stories of the incredible people of Calderdale. I'm your host, Samantha McCormick, Artistic Director and Founder of Curious Motion, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this adventure. Calder Navigation invites you to open your hearts and minds to the tapestry of everyday moments and significant events that shape our lives. Through authentic and relaxed conversations, we'll delve into the complexities of what it means to be human, celebrating the diversity and resilience of our community. This podcast is not just a collection of stories. Each episode is a unique exploration, a tribute to the rich tapestry of our shared experiences. So, come and join us on this journey and let's celebrate the remarkable individuals who call the Calder Valley home, and let's uncover the depth and beauty of the human experience together. We are delighted to welcome Rosalind Arden, a somatic therapist, to the very first episode of Calder Navigation. With her expertise in working one-on-one with individuals who have faced challenges such as depression and chronic fatigue, Rosalind helps them reconnect with their vitality through the power of conversation and creative processes like movement, drawing, and writing for health. Her personal mental health journey fuels her dedication to supporting others on their own mental health paths. Rosalind is constantly amazed by the body-mind's innate wisdom to thrive and express creativity when provided with the right support and connections. Rosalind is also a regular participant in our sessions and has recently joined the Curious Motion team as one of our fantastic volunteers. Before we dive into our discussion with Rosalind, please note that the audio quality for this episode might not be up to our usual standards due to technical issues with the recording. We hope this doesn't detract from Rosalind's brilliant insights and the kind thoughts she shared with us. Welcome, Rosalind.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's really nice to get this time actually to talk to you. Often it's lots of hellos, goodbyes, thank you so much for doing the tea and coffee. dancing together, which is lovely.
Yeah.
But not often we get a chance to chat a bit more, so I'm really excited to talk to you and thank you very much for agreeing to do this as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm really excited to be here and I'm really excited with the whole expansion of Curious Motion's kind of journey and great, happy to be part of it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an exciting time, definitely. So I thought, could we start with a little bit of a whistle stop around not your entire life, because you know we haven't got that long, but maybe like where you grew up, a little bit about your background before we get into some of the bits we're going to chat about today.
Well, I think, you know, I'm from Heckmondwike, so over the hill, if you like. Sort of grew up around Kirklees area and lived there most of my life, been away and come back and so on. But always been around this area, and you know, sort of as a child, always sort of went to the local towns. My mother used to take us shopping in Halifax and Huddersfield, Leeds, Bradford. So always felt part of a bigger, wider kind of network. Had a very ordinary childhood in many ways, but I think it was coloured by my mother's depression, and so that was always a thread through our lives. I had one sister. And I think so mental health has always been on the agenda, if you like, in some shape or form. And then my own kind of journey as I kind of left home and sort of went out into the world and started to realise that I too experienced, I didn't know it was depression, but I felt strange. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what that was really. So I had to navigate the world through that lens of something's not quite right, I can't quite function fully in the world, and, you know, trying to find my way through that. And I was, you know, like a lot of people, I was very successful at that in some ways. You know, I ended up going to university, you know, having a family, doing all the normal things, but, you know, always with this kind of edge of, you know, actually sometimes I just can't do this, you know. And so obviously that, at a certain point, it was actually, I was a mature student at university, and it was actually at university that I got access to a counselling service for the first time, because I really struggled through my final year and I didn't think I was going to make it. Mm. And so that was my first taste of counselling. And then that opened a door for me because I'm the kind of person who wants to demystify things. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, what is this? What's happening? What is counselling? And so then I started training and I kind of switched career paths. I'd kind of trained as a housing manager in local authorities, housing associations. I worked for Stoneham Housing Association in Halifax at one time. But then, you know, gradually I shifted over into the counselling and psychotherapy world. And that now is, you know, a big part of my work, really. And then coming right up to the present, I suppose my journey through my own depression history, and also I should mention two very long periods of chronic fatigue syndrome, which again required me to investigate, well, what's going on here in this body-mind? Mm-hmm. And so lots of explorations in lots of different, you know, systems of what can support me. Ultimately leading initially to somatic meditation, going to the States and training, and that opened the door to somatic movement and dance and that whole world, which ended up with me doing a master's degree in dance and somatic wellbeing, which, like, who would have thought it, you know?
I know, and I just can't wait to ask you about all of that. I'm going to hold off slightly.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, the range of experience, like you said. It's who would have known that you would have ended up doing that. And I just picked up there, you were talking about how you want to demystify things.
Yeah.
And what does that mean to you, demystifying something? What's the impact of that?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, something about, there was the wanting to understand myself, and then there's the wanting to understand, well, what is this process called counselling, and what is it that makes it different to other types of talking or other types of activity? What is it that's actually helpful? What is it that actually really helps? And, you know, I have that same curiosity now about somatics. Well, what is it we're really doing? And I kind of ask it every day, well, what am I doing? You know, like, am I just kind of rolling about on the floor sometimes, or, you know, like waving my arms about and kind of going, oh, this is nice. And why do I feel better afterwards, you know? And that whole question about, well, what is it help? What is it that helps me? And then what is it that helps other people? You know, can I find a way to, you know, apply this in my life to support me and then to support others? I think that's almost my curiosity.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I know you've mentioned to me before, and partly why you were happy to come on the podcast, is that you are open about talking about things. And I suppose the demystify links into that, because, like you said, it's supporting your own self.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of value in that for other people and for our wider community and society.
Yeah.
And it's really nice that you have this approach that is always curious and is always like, but why is this happening? And it isn't just like, right, I know this now, done.
Yeah.
Because life isn't really, I think we get told that you go on a journey and things get better all of a sudden, and then everything is great forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be wonderful. But it's not the way it is, isn't it? And that idea of just always questioning it is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just something to mention there is that, you know, it's true that these days I'm very open about my mental health, my history, my health. And, you know, there was a time when that was not true because, you know, as we know, and it's still true to some degree, sometimes there is stigma and shame around mental health. And so for many years, I didn't talk about my mental health to a lot of people. And, you know, I was careful about where I spoke about it. And, you know, it was like, it was only when I started working with a depression self-help group in Batley that it was like coming out. It's like, yes, me too, I have depression. And then I set up a, you know, counselling service and train people in counselling skills to, you know, so that we could help each other. That was a big, and that was probably, you know, I was probably in my mid-30s before I was able to do that, before I was able to speak out. And I suppose now it's kind of like, well, actually, we're all going through stuff every day to different degrees, and we all carry different histories, and, you know, we all have, every day is different, isn't it, for everybody? But, you know, there is something about what I know now is giving putting words on things or putting expression on things. That might be movement, painting, drawing, whatever works for you. Something about expressing it in the world that allows it to shift.
That's very interesting. And would you say that the shift from that experience you had when you were younger around having to maybe mask and you couldn't say those words.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing that was possible at that point. And now you look at things now, would you say there has been a sort of societal shift in some way? I'm not saying a perfect one, we're nowhere near that, are we? I suppose there's more things happening now that are supporting people to express themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, yes. And you know, I can remember my mother saying, you know, like when she was younger, there wasn't counselling, there weren't mental health groups, there wasn't anything for her to access. I mean, and, you know, she knew that antidepressants were not the answer for her, and they can be very helpful for some people, they can be life-saving, and, you know, there can be a support system, and there's still something in you that wants to be expressed. And so, I think over time, we certainly are shifting as a culture. I think we are talking more. I mean, things like the Mental Health Foundation, obviously things like Curious Motion. There's lots of different people in organisations and groups now who are speaking out, celebrities who speak out, you know, social media, people who are, you know, willing to kind of say, hey, you know, like Ruby Wax has just kind of got a new book out.
Oh, yeah.
So I think there is a shift, and what we know is actually, you know, mental health challenges are on the rise. And, you know, so what is it that we're doing as a culture that's actually creating some of this stuff, you know? And for young people at the moment, you know, it's like it's a real concern, and that although we might be able to talk about it more, services are not necessarily accessible and available when people really need them.
Very true. It's very, very true. I think so. A lot of it has come to the forefront, hasn't it? Maybe society in general, I am massively generalising, is paying more attention. But like you say, why is this now? Well, not now. It has been on the rise a lot more than just now.
Yeah.
But why is that happening? And it's not always, in my opinion, about just the treatment once it's happening. It's, you know, what can we do to prevent?
Yeah.
And obviously there isn't one answer to that as well. There's millions of possibilities around that. And it's just really interesting to hear your experience, having had your own personal journey with that and come through different cultural approaches to this place where we are now, and what that might mean for you, your extended social circle, family, but and the wider community and our, you know, even wider and wider. So expression, let's go on to expression. Which I'm very biased. I mean, most people listening would know that. My background is in dance, so, you know, let's just get it out there. And obviously Curious Motion's core art form is dance.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to me when we were chatting about you coming on the podcast before today. You were saying how you saw the arts originally as something that was absolutely not for you. And I wondered if we could start there. Why did you think the arts wasn't for you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, my dad was a skilled labourer, you know, was an electrician. And my mother was actually a French teacher. And my mother did have very much an arts bent, but she was very much into literature. She dabbled in a bit of drawing, painting. She had a little bit of skill that her depression never managed to kind of go any places with, and I kind of knew about that, but I never felt, you know, as a child through school that any of that was like my aptitudes. You know, so I was fairly, you know, I probably didn't pass my O level in art or whatever, and And I can remember doing dance at school. We did at grammar school in Bradford. We did do dance, and my dance teacher left maybe when I was in the third or fourth year. And I can remember years and years later that I realised that I had a lot of grief about his departure, and that maybe had got in the way for me, that I really didn't know that. And then somehow through my therapy process, realising, that was an impact on me that I didn't even recognise at the time. You know, it's kind of like, so maybe there's something there. But so I never, you know, I did have strong aptitudes in things like organisation and management, and I did a housing studies degree, and, you know, I ended up working in the local authority for many years. And, you know, so I had some strong aptitudes around those things. And of course, you know, you follow those things that where you can feel like you're a bit successful in the world, you know, despite, you know, whatever your mental health state is. But somehow I never saw myself as artistic, creative, kind of like that was for other people. And yeah, and so it was only like, as I say, doing the somatic meditation and then feeling like, oh, that's a doorway to somatics, that I really had no idea what it was really, apart from it was, you know, the body from the inside out rather than the outside in, would be a very shorthand way of saying it. And having investigated the inner body through meditation and realising that actually there's something missing here for me. Meditation's been a very core practice for me. And it was like, actually, there's two things missing, movement and sound. It's like if you're sitting in a shrine room meditating, you're not moving, you know, and you're not making a noise. And there's something about those very human instincts that we all have to move the body and sound in whatever way, that I started to realise, actually, there's something here that needs attending to. And that then enabled me to apply for the Masters in Dance and Somatic Wellbeing. Having looked at that course for many years, you know, I'd gone on that website for years and kind of gone, oh, well, that looks really interesting, but I'd never get in because I'm not a trained dancer and I haven't done that, and so I wouldn't even get an interview. And I suppose doing the somatic meditation, and because I'd reached a certain point, you know, done, you know, my other trainings and so on, and done my counselling and psychotherapy, and starting to frame that course as, oh, you know, it's kind of a wide remit, gave me the confidence to apply. And the staff were so open to, you know, making the course accessible to all. And of course, when I got there, actually, there were very few, you know, professional dancers. Mm-hmm. There were certainly some people who'd done some formal dance training, but, you know, at least half the course were from all sorts of backgrounds, you know, you wouldn't have imagined that had found their way there, you know, through, you know, they might have been physiotherapists or, you know, any walk of life really, but would come to explore, you know, what it means to be, you know, in a body and to be able to be creative. So that was like opened up like a whole new field for me. And it was like, you know, it was kind of like, and I kind of always said, it's like, this is my retirement gift to myself. I'm going to go and do this master's and I'm going to go and play, you know. And it's like, you know, and I always knew that the child in me had not really played. You know, I suppose my mother's depression had impacted on that. And so it took me a long time to kind of access my, you know, sort of inner child kind of, you know, playfulness. And, you know, and it's still sometimes, you know, I feel a bit restricted. But that whole thing was like, oh, my goodness, I've just stepped into a whole other world where people are talking about things that I've never talked about and, you know, using movement practices in a dance studio, using drawing and writing and sculpting and working with objects in nature. And, you know, and it was like, oh, wow. Here we are, you know, like playtime.
Sounds like complete heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you feel a sense of freedom?
Yeah.
Is that all right to say that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I think that is the essence of somatics. And that was why I was able to go on that training, even though at the time I was like, you know, 2 years into a period of chronic fatigue syndrome that lasted 6 years, and the staff supported me every inch of the way, because the whole point of the training was about listening to soma, listening to body, listening to the inner experience of the body, and allowing that to be the guide. And that's a healing journey in itself. It's a whole healing journey. And that was what, you know, a big part of my recovery through my physical and mental health was through that process.
I'm just thinking about what you said there about it's the body as the guide, and we live in a world where that is not the case. In the majority of our experience, regardless of who we are, really, those of us who are trying to live in that are still in a world that is very thinking brain led, which is fine. We need that too. It's all welcome, isn't it? But it's tapping into this sort of innate ability for healing. And I wondered, was there any moment where you had a realization that you had that in you and you could do that for yourself? Tapping into, you know, your inner experience, and there was something that your body knew that maybe your conscious mind or academic or whatever maybe hadn't quite connected to.
Yeah, and I think I'd started to get inklings of that through the somatic meditation because we were kind of moving, you know, giving attention to the inner body space. But I think with movement, what I found was, it's like, oh, the body, this sounds strange to say, the body has a mind of its own.
Yeah.
And the body has a wisdom that we're kind of completely neglecting. It's like we really prize our intellectual capacities and our minds to, you know, as you say, absolutely necessary for making things happen and being in the world. And yet there's this whole untapped resource that could inform the mind that actually there's an innate wisdom in the body. And that there was something for me about, once I kind of, you know, had enough experience of learning to move from impulse, learning to, you know, all that kind of training of just, and, you know, we call it training, but it's so simple. Like, well, what is it like if we just pay attention to the weight dropping through your feet or whatever, and just making that connection with ground and experiencing gravity? And, you know, these are things that, you know, most of us never think about, talk about, but when we pay attention and we experience, it's like, oh, there's a whole shift in how we experience our bodies and how we experience our minds, because our minds get some new information that kind of gives us a bit of, it's like we get rearranged.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, rearranged. I like that. Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's new information, I was going to say energy, I'm not sure if that's the right word, but it's a kind of like another area of being a human, isn't it? That, like you said, we are neglecting a part of our being.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I've always tried at my best to try and live a life where I can experience things and do your best to whatever that means, and that would be unique for different people. But there is something about that untapped part of the human experience that is just almost dormant, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's, you know, and that's what's great about, you know, what you're offering with the Curious Motion dance classes and so on, is that, you know, opportunity, you know, although you're structuring it within a formal dance session, but still that enough kind of slowing things down and like really noticing what's happening, really experiencing the body, understanding how moving the body impacts the brain, and how all that is just feeding the whole system. And, you know, we are whole systems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're sometimes just so occupied with heads, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're like these kind of talking heads, and it's like, oh my goodness, there's all this resource. Mm-hmm. And then particularly when our mental health goes off a bit all right, it's like, we don't even know that actually we could support our mental health through being more connected with our bodies.
Yeah. And as somebody that didn't have a dance upbringing, and by that I mean, I didn't have the most traditional dance upbringing, but I danced through all of my childhood, not in formal ways. I did dance training, I went to uni, I actually went to three unis. You know, I did what I thought you had to do.
Yeah.
I also thought I wanted to do certain things in dance that I haven't ended up doing. But I'm just thinking about, it's really valuable to hear about this from somebody that didn't sort of do the, like you said, about not being able, thinking, oh, I can't go on that course, I'm not a trained dancer. Yeah. I'm sure hundreds and hundreds of people have probably thought that. Yeah. And I think we get told that.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about the flip side of this is that sometimes somatic work, or if we use words like somatics, or we talk about particular things, for a lot of people it's so alien.
Yeah.
That it's almost off-putting.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, what are there any little tiny little things that we could do in our everyday, maybe if we've never experienced this before and we're thinking, oh wow, okay, I don't really understand what you mean, but this is really interesting, because it is a very accessible practice, isn't it? Yes. Like you said, it's very simple.
Yeah.
It could be done by anybody, and I just wondered if there were any little examples or little kind of things that would support somebody who was very new to this to tap into it.
Yeah, well, you know, right now I'm sitting here and part of my attention is on you and part of my attention is within.
Mm.
And where my attention is going at the moment is like to my seat, to my legs on the chair, to my feet on the ground. And, you know, I'm just being here. I can feel the sofa supporting my back. And all of that feels like a ground of support whilst I'm sitting here in a strange situation. Mm-hmm. You know, we're being recorded. Mm-hmm. and I'm, you know, I'm kind of going, it's okay, the ground's here, you know, I'm safe, I'm supported. So something about having, you know, just, we can develop what we call dual attention. Mm-hmm. We can have inner and outer, and often we're giving a lot of attention to out there, and then we're kind of disconnecting from our bodies, and then we start feeling anxious. Mm. Or we start, you know, it's like I'm not safe.
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
Like the nervous system really needs to feel safe.
Mm.
You know, and we know that now from a lot of modern studies. And so there's something about the body feels safe when it's supported, when it's in a safe relationships. Mm. when we're with, you know, other people we feel good with. But we can use very simple things like, we are connected to the earth. Mm. This body has a relationship. You know, we have a primary relationship with gravity, and we can tap into that. So, you know, just bringing your attention to the soles of your feet and just noticing what that's like. You know, sit here with my cup of tea and just feel my hand, feel the warmth of my hand against the cup, and just feeling that texture, relationship, and the taste of the tea. And so it's just very, you know, it's just slowing down enough to kind of go, this is actually really what's happening right now. And the mind can be busy going off with what am I doing this afternoon?
Yes.
Or is this podcast going to be okay?
Yeah.
And what, you know, all that stuff. But actually, sure. You know, right here, I'm, you know, I can see you, I feel safe with you. And, you know, I know that I'm safe here sitting on this sofa.
Mm. Yeah. Slowing down. Nice.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah. I mean, I have kind of worked in this field similarly in a more formal dance way.
Yeah.
And I know all of these things in a way in my own experience, but I struggle to do them. You know, just you then saying, I'm feeling my cup, I'm holding a cup of tea as well. I've nearly finished it because it's lovely. And you just, you saying about the texture of the cup, I was like, oh yeah, I can feel that. And there is something reassuring and being right here, right now. And I know we get a lot of that. I think sometimes we get sent messages about mindfulness or being in the present moment over and over and over again, and it can get a little bit diluted potentially. But there really is something about that slowing down, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then how do you integrate that into your movement and into your dance and your expressive approach to that as well? What's that like for you?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, I would be, I suppose, in terms of like, you know, the kind of, obviously you do things like warm-ups, you know, so I would be doing a warm-up and I might be more emphasising, you know, just things like, okay, so I come into the space, where's my body drawn to this morning to start from? Oh, actually, I really want to be over there where the light is this morning. Or, oh, I'm wanting to hide in this corner today. And just following that, yeah? So that might be like, okay, so I follow that. So I go to that spot and then it's like, how does my body want to start today? Okay, oh, I'm actually feeling a bit tired. So I'm just going to lie down and just allowing the body to lie down and, oh, feeling the contact with the ground and, you know, oh, is there any movement in the body, or is the body needing to rest? So, you know, for me, movement and rest is the dance. Movement and rest. And, you know, again, we can emphasize movement and then it's like, well, let's come back to rest. Let's move from a place of rest. And, you know, again, this slowing down, this really paying attention and just, oh, actually, my hips are starting to move a bit. I'm noticing there's just a little bit of rocking coming out of that, you know, that rest, that stillness. And I'm just following that now, and you can see me doing that now. I'm just noticing that happening in the body. And then, oh, it's getting bigger, it's getting bigger. Oh, my arm's moving now, isn't it? And it's like, oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And so this is the body just, it's just unwinding, really. It's just doing its thing. If I allow it enough time and space to do that, and then it might, you know, eventually we might take off into, you know, oh, it's maybe wanting to get vertical, maybe it's wanting to run around, maybe it's wanting a bit of like really speeding up, or, you know, and but it's allowing the body to guide the pace, to the tempo, and of course that helps if you've got some guidance as well, if someone's facilitating a process where, you know, you might be getting some cues, but the invitation is always, well, here are some cues and you follow what works for you. So it's much more about finding one's own inner process. And of course, that might also be, we might work in pairs and one person might move and someone else might be witnessing your move, and then someone else might mirror your moving or move in response, which might not look like you're moving at all. So, you know, lots of things like that. There's lots of different methods. And then you might take that into, let's do some mark making, some drawing, some painting, whatever. How does that get expressed after you've moved? Is there some writing that wants to emerge, you know, stream of consciousness, or three words about your experience, or taking that back into movement so you can make cycles of creativity. So lots and lots of different methods.
When you're in a group setting, so let's use our class, for example, that you come to, just because it's something we can both imagine and we've experienced.
Yeah.
We're in a group setting, whether it's our Tuesday class, those kind of matter. But we've got other people around us, and we live in a world where most of us are very, very, very concerned about what we look like, feel like, anybody's opinion of us, the external expression of us, and that person or those people's opinion. And in dance, I have found that it is a very vulnerable place to be for most people, including myself. And I have danced my whole life. I still feel vulnerable. I have never ever other than when I've done performances that I have massively rehearsed, which is, you know, a huge process to go through, got to a point, you know, regularly where I'm not feeling vulnerable. I always am, even when I'm teaching. And what I have found in my experience is a lot of people are so concerned about that part, which is absolutely not a criticism. It's a completely ordinary thing. And it's an expected thing. I think all of us have that at whatever scale. Yeah. How do you enable yourself? And I know this is a journey and it's not a case of like, oh, well, today I just don't care. You know, when people say, well, I just don't care anymore what people think. And I think, really? How do you do that? I can't do that. It's really hard. But I just wondered if there were any, if you've had any experience of that. Have you, were you ever in a place where you were very conscious of what you looked like when you were dancing?
For sure.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And as you say, I mean, all of us are self-conscious.
Yes, yeah.
And, you know, all of us are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all have our different edges about where our vulnerability lies in, you know, what we're exposing or whatever. And so I think the first step is like, oh, yeah, I feel a bit vulnerable here.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's like acknowledging. Yeah, actually, I really, it's, you know, it's fine, actually. It's human to feel vulnerable. And, you know, because, you know, in a sense, I mean, the word that's coming up, and it wouldn't be everybody's word, but it's like, well, kind of exposing your soul, you know? And it's kind of, you know, like, am I going to be received here?
Yes.
Am I going to be judged? How am I going to be viewed? You know, and
am
so
safe?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, it's like we don't lie down in the middle of the road to be trampled on, do we? It's
no.
Like, you know, and so we need to feel safe enough, you know. And but I think that acknowledging, you know, just noticing, it's like, again, it's like noticing, it's like, oh, and it might not be every time, but I might be going, oh, gosh, I'm feeling a bit shaky today. I'm feeling a bit like, I don't want people to see me moving today or, you know. And even just that, allowing that to be here and just kind of going, oh, yeah, okay, it's there, yeah. And just, you know, and that just gives me a little bit more space, a little bit more breath, a little bit more, yeah, okay, and how is it? And maybe I don't want to be seen today, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we're not trying to become superhumans.
No.
We're just, it's more about being authentic to ourselves and not, because I think the almost like the worst thing is like pretending.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
like,
gosh.
Oh, yeah, it's like, I can do this, you know, sort of like, which is a very cultural thing to do, isn't it? You know,
yes.
Like drive a coach and horses through it kind of thing. And you can hurt yourself in that process. So for me, it's about being tender towards, you know, our vulnerabilities.
Mm. Yeah, that's really wonderful. And I suppose in a group setting, say if you sign up for a class or a session or whatever, that is, there is so much, I'm going to say responsibility for the person, people, group, organisation leading that space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there will be, you know, it is sometimes about finding your people a little bit,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
We're all going to have different things that we need.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've always thought as well, when I'm delivering things, my aim is to create that feeling of safety with a recognition that vulnerability is coming with that.
Yeah.
And that we are not going to shy away from it. But we're gonna try and make a space that enables the people in the room to work with that in the way they need to.
Yeah.
But again, my space, our space, isn't going to be for everybody. And it's a case of, I suppose it's that thing of finding it and just, maybe it's being curious again. Maybe it's that keeping that open mind about, I'm going to try this today and it doesn't have to go well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things can go a bit rubbish, not to the point where you enter a space and something is happening that is harmful, but maybe it's just not the thing you need. It might not be a dance context, it could be anything, but trying a few things and maybe exploring, and maybe it's accepting that thing of things can be good, bad and everything in between, and we don't need a black and white approach to this.
Yeah.
And sometimes things take time as well. And day one isn't going to be the time when everything is solved. And most things aren't ever going to be solved.
No. And, you know, I mean, and you're very good at that, about getting people to play with things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is about practice. And this is about, you know, the brain kind of finding ways to do things. And, you know, it's about playfulness, experimentation. And, you know, it's like, well, we can't get away from the fact that we did have all this baggage at school of, you know, being judged and you've got to get to this mark or whatever. And, you know, and I suppose the thing in the classes you're running in terms of like, well, they are more structured in terms of, well, we are doing a dance, mm-hmm. you know, we are doing making shapes together mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff. So there is something to practice, slightly different in a more, you know, somatic class where we're not necessarily, we might be moving together, but we're not, there's no specified form that yes. we're trying to get to. So
yeah.
so that it's less of an issue, I think, mm-hmm. in somatic. It's much more yeah. about finding your own way and meeting those places in you. They're still there, but they don't show up as strongly, I think, as in something like,
yeah.
well, oh gosh, I'm dancing and I don't feel very good at this,
yeah,
or,
and
you know,
to learn this yeah, very complicated yeah, step or whatever yeah, it is. Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me how we can combine some of that, tapping into that awareness from a somatic experience or, you know, an inner experience, whatever
yeah.
you want to call it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have been to a somatics class.
No, absolutely
to access
not.
It.
No.
But how can we and allow that to happen as
yeah.
well as if we are in a session where we're saying, yeah, I really actually want to learn a dance or
yeah.
I want to make a dance with a group
yeah.
and I want to learn some technique or whatever
yeah.
it is
yeah.
and keep that awareness of yourself and still
yeah.
be led by your own body.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting thing, isn't it? And
yeah.
and again, it's a skill, I suppose. I say that in a funny way because I feel a little bit like it's not a like, checkbox, oh, I've learned this, I've got a certificate. It's not that at all. It's still an experience that is going to shift all of the time. And no matter how much we practice different approaches to movement or creativity, there will be days when things aren't working.
Yeah.
On all sorts of scales. And I always think of journeys as they're not this sort of A to B. They're a very cyclical, messy, wobbly
yeah.
Thing. And I suppose it's, I don't know, helping us embrace a bit of that as well.
Yeah, and I think that is, you know, I suppose the essence of, you know, what I learned through doing the Masters about, you know, opening up to creativity
mm.
is that creativity is a messy process
mm.
and it is changing moment to moment. And then that's the point of it, is we're tapping into, you know, what can we access, what's really here, what helps us to do the next thing, you know, what's showing up. And so there is something about embracing the messiness of life and the chaos of it. And because that's, again, you know, the culture is, well, keep it neat and tidy,
mm-hmm.
keep it controlled, let's have some order. And, you know, actually life is messy. Life
yeah.
is chaotic. Life is, you know, creativity is always bursting forth if we
mm-hmm.
let it. And often we're kind of damping it down. So yeah, I think that is, you know, like just allowing the messiness.
Just letting it be as best you can.
Yeah.
Wow, Rosalind, I could talk to you about this for days.
We could have a whole series.
Let's just do a whole podcast. Oh, I love it. It's, yeah, I just, there's so much value in it. And I'm really grateful to you for sharing your perspective and your journey to this as well. And I think
mm.
it's really important that we can talk about and a dance kind of training experience, whatever interest, that didn't come from traditional dance routes.
Yeah.
You don't have to have danced when you were 4, 5, 6, 7 to the age of 18 and then done blah, 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 blah to tap into this. And like, you've trained professionally in a practice that is incredibly valuable and is part of the dance sector. It's part of the art sector. It's part of well-being. It's part of all of these amazing things. And I'm just really grateful to you for sharing that with us. I think there's so much we could learn, and I hope maybe we can keep talking about this as we
absolutely
as the future happens and as we explore our own creativity in class. And yeah, I'm very excited to see what else might come from yeah getting to know you as we keep going.
Yeah me too. Yeah, and I'm just loving my own little stepping into curious motion. I was so excited to find yours and Matt's classes. And it's like, oh my goodness, just up the road, I can go to a dance
yeah.
class. And which I would, you know, I wouldn't ever have done. I wouldn't
sure.
ever have joined a dance class
no.
before I'd done that Masters. And
yeah.
Whereas now it's like, well, I'm still not a formally trained dancer and I'm coming along to have some fun and to play and just to move my body and meet some people and have a cup of tea.
Yeah, oh yeah, we have to have a cup of tea. Yeah, exactly that. It is that, isn't it? It's dance, but not what you think it is in a way, I suppose. If we're comparing to maybe what we're told about it. But well, thank you so much. It's been absolutely wonderful talking to you.
Thank you. Likewise, I've really enjoyed this. Yeah, let's do it again.
Let's definitely. I'm going to definitely do that again. Thank you, Rosalind.
And that brings us to the end of another captivating episode of Calder Navigation. Thank you for joining us on this voyage through the stories that shape Calderdale. We hope that these conversations have touched your heart, inspired your mind, and reminded you of the power of human connection. As we navigate life together, let's carry these stories with us, cherishing the lessons they teach us and the bonds they strengthen. Remember, Calder Navigation is just one part of the Welland Activator Project, a collective effort to combat loneliness and isolation in our community. We encourage you to explore the various classes, workshops and walks offered through the programme and join us at our special showcase event, Welland, where we can come together and celebrate the magic of Elland and Calderdale. You can find out more about the project at curiousmotion.org.uk. We would like to express our deepest gratitude to Calderdale Council, reaching communities from the National Lottery Community Fund and Arts Council England for their invaluable support in making this podcast and the Welland Activator possible. Thanks to Untold Creative for production support. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to Calder Navigation on your preferred podcast platform so you never miss an episode. And please help us spread the word by sharing the podcast with your friends, family, and anyone who might find solace, inspiration, or a sense of belonging in these stories. As we conclude this chapter, we invite you to keep exploring, keep connecting, and keep navigating the currents of life with curiosity and compassion. Remember, the journey continues, and together we can make a difference. Until next time, fair winds and warm hearts.